Welcome to the AT Tips Cast, exploring and investigating the implementation of assistive technology in public schools. I'm your host, Chris Bouguet. This is episode number 30, recorded on March 8th, 2009. Before I get too deep into this episode, I wanted to let any first-time listener know that, well, this particular episode is going to be a bit different. Anyone who has listened to any other episode will know that I usually stick to more concrete strategies, but the tips embedded in this episode, well, I'll just warn you now, they're more educational philosophy than concrete strategy. So, with that disclaimer out of the way, let's not waste any more time. Let's jump right into AT tip number 41 and number 42, the top two things I learned at NARIN 2009. Number two, a brain-based approach to learning. I attended two sessions by presenter Frank Cross from the Upside Down organization, located in Baltimore, Maryland. The two sessions were titled Jack's Brain, Jill's Brain, Why Gender Differences Matter, and Giving a Fish a Bath, the Untold Story of the Adolescent Mind. In a nutshell, Mr. Cross made the point that teachers are in the business of making memories. The whole nature of teaching is to create memories in students that students can then later use in their lives. He went on to make the point that for some reason, most teachers aren't required to take neuroanatomy courses in their training or college, despite the fact that the entire point of their job is to work on building memories, which, of course, happens in the brain. To illustrate his point, he made the analogy to taking your car into the shop. When your car is broken, you need to take it to someone who understands all the parts of the car and know how they work together so that the problem can be analyzed, pinpointed, and fixed. A teacher, working in much the same way, should know about the parts of the brain so they can more effectively do their job of building memories. Mr. Cross also explained that the adolescent brain works much differently than an adult brain. Using analogies, visuals, and personal stories, he described the functions of different parts of the brain and how they work in adolescence versus how they work in adulthood. With every point he made, I sat there thinking, yep, that was me when I was a teen, yep, that was my wife in her early 20s, and most often, yeah, that makes total sense for the students I know. I left both presentations energized to relearn the physiology of the brain and learn more about the changes in brain physiology and chemistry during various stages of life. It's been a few weeks since the conference, and as I'm interacting with students now and witnessing their behaviors, I'm still thinking, okay, that student is doing that behavior because of his amygdala, or that behavior has to be related to his cortisol levels. Mr. Cross mentioned that the sessions for the conference were actually truncated versions of full-day workshops, and needless to say, I was wishing that I could attend the full-day workshop. If you get the chance, check out the Upside Down organization at upsidedownorganization.org. I'll have a link to their website over at the blog site, attipscast.wordpress.com. Number one.
Putting Americans to work, doing the work that America needs done.
In case you didn't recognize that person, that was the current President of the United States, Barack Obama, during one of his weekly radio addresses. I've heard him say that line over and over and over again in different speeches. Throughout the NARIN conference, a reoccurring theme seemed to emerge for me from a variety of sessions and conversations, a subplot to the conference, if you will. My number one thing that I learned at the NARIN conference was an affirmation of the idea, let's put students to work doing the jobs that schools need done. I've always incorporated students into my professional tasks. As a speech therapist, rather than making articulation cards or communication boards myself, I would work with students on the computer during sessions to make them with me. The students liked the activity of creating, the work was always worthwhile and meaningful, and it saved me time planning and creating materials. When I needed to organize my files and materials, I made it an activity with my students who had categorization goals. Sometimes students can work to create their own activities, like file folder games that they can take home, for instance, or sometimes just knowing that the work they're doing is going to benefit another student is a huge motivating factor. Students helping other students and students doing work for their school aren't exactly new ideas. I mean, after all, how many schools have students who take attendance down to the office, or hall monitors, or student council, or crossing guards, or whatever, the list goes on. I also know that many classrooms with students with multiple or severe disabilities are doing jobs to assist the school, and in some cases the community, such as crunching cans, placing labels and stamps, shredding documents, and that list goes on too. But at the NARIN conference, a conference entirely about ways to assist students who are at risk, it further solidified the idea to me that providing students with meaningful jobs that would improve the school would create a situation where everyone wins, and that there's actually a lot of jobs that need to be done in schools. Stuff like painting, doing repairs, being transportation matrons, creating adapted materials for other students, organizing mentor programs like Miss Florida mentioned in the previous episode, landscaping, technology training for teachers. Yes, students actually doing professional development workshops for teachers about technology. Art design projects for the school, like a playbill cover or a CD design. School webpage design, newsletter development and newsletter distribution, production and marketing of school-made products for sale, and the list goes on there too. There are literally hundreds of jobs that schools need done to function effectively that take up educator time and resources. Schools already have a built-in workforce ready to do many of these jobs, the students themselves. In return, the students learn by authentically doing. Maybe they receive credits for accomplishing the activity, and generally, the students get a sense that they've made a difference in the world, and that's a pretty powerful feeling for any person. In many cases, there may be some logistics to work out in order to get the job started, let alone completed. But logistics are called logistics because they're meant to be worked out. If they weren't able to be worked out, they'd be called roadblocks or showstoppers. If you've got a program, system, or idea that's working for your school district, that's putting students to work doing the jobs that schools need done, then I'd love to hear from you. Share a comment on the blog site at attipscast.wordpress.com so others can be inspired by your story, or send me an email at attipscast@gmail.com. All right, so brain-based methodologies and putting students to work aren't the most technology-centric concrete tips in the world, but they are good ideas nonetheless, so I felt like they were worth sharing in an episode. Future episodes will be back to good old-fashioned hard-boiled tools that you can sink your teeth into. Remember that you can communicate with other listeners to the show by joining the AT Tippers group on Facebook or Classroom 2.0. Until next time,
may all your interventions be inclusive.
May all your strategies be supportive.
See, putting the students to work is working for me already.